This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Walker. Normally, it's Brian, but today I'm taking the reins, but I am with him. So we have a fun podcast to share with you. We're taking it back old school. I will explain, but first, let me please give a big thank you to our sponsors, RepairPal. We were a RepairPal shop and we loved how they brought us new customers, and we recommend that you check them out at repairpal.com/shops. So thank you, RepairPal. All right, friends, here is what happened. Yesterday, we were at Vision. It was the last day. We were on our way, kind of walking out the door. I had just taught a class, and my new friend, Jesse Sammons at Thoroughbred, is it Thoroughbred Auto Repair?
Yep.
In California, comes up. We're having a great conversation with him, and he has a super cool brand. I am a bit obsessed with horses and all things equestrian, and he has a horse in his logo, and so he gave me a sticker for his shop, and I loved it. And we were talking about it. And from that conversation, I told him, Brian and I were explaining how we are obsessed with Grayton Beach over in Florida, which is part of 30A. We're not supposed to be telling about 30A. It's supposed to be a secret. But anyways, we started sharing with him how that whole brand, the 30A brand, came from a sticker. And so I was telling him how much I loved his sticker and he might just start a whole new movement. And that reminded Brian and I of this podcast that we recorded with the founder of the 30A lifestyle brand.
So before we had the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast, as from listening to this, our agency, Shop Marketing Pros, used to be called Five Stones Media. And we had a podcast with Five Stones Media called the Ripple Podcast. And it's still out there. You can go listen to all of the episodes on Spotify or iTunes. But we recorded this podcast with Mike Ragsdale. And like Kim said, he was the founder of the 30A company, or is the founder of the 30A company. And we recorded this sitting on the back deck of his home overlooking the Choctawahatchee Bay.
I didn't know you knew how to say that.
Yeah, to this day, it is absolutely my favorite podcast we've ever recorded. I went back and listened to it again not long ago, and it inspired me listening to my own podcast. And of course, it was listening to Mike and his story. And he's got a very interesting story. And I'm not going to give you too much of the details because I want you to listen into it, but it's about creating a life that you don't need to escape from. That's the overall.
Just say that again.
Creating a life that you don't need to escape from.
So good.
Where you're not just like living for the next vacation. And I know most of y'all shop owners, many of y'all don't take vacations to begin with, but it's such an amazing story. And we know shop owners who they live this type of life.
It is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they own vacation homes. They have their favorite places that they go to. They travel a lot. And this case, Mike completely packed up his family and moved. And
yeah. So like Brian, I don't want to give much away, but I do want to say this is where you're going.
Probably not. Go ahead. Right.
Just this one thing, because if you were at Vision, you heard Scott Stratton say, would you work for you? And when he said that, it really stabbed a bunch of people in the heart. And I can't help but think that is sort of similar to what happened with Mike Ragsdale in his kitchen one day. He'd always talked about moving to the beach, and his kids said, quit talking about it, Dad. You know it's never going to happen. And so happens next?
Leave that part out of the story.
What happens next gets unfolded, so you'll have to listen, but it's really going to inspire you.
So this was one of our earlier podcasts. The audio is not going to be quite what you are used to. Although
this was 6 years ago.
I know that Carm and his team are going to digitally remaster it for you and make it the best that it can be. But this is one of those that listen to it, take it to heart, and let it impact your life.
And I'll throw out there, if you email us, then I'm going to send you something. So I'm going to say the first 5 people to email podcast@shoutmarketingpros.com, if you want it, I'm going to send you one of their 30A stickers that you're going to hear about that's very popular. If you Google 30A sticker, you're going to see what I'm talking about.
That's fun. And look, this is a little bit of a longer episode. We're a little over an hour talking to him.
So good, though.
Listen to every minute of it because we take a few different paths and every one of them is great.
I have that picture. Can we put that picture in the show notes somehow?
Which picture?
We took a picture with him on the deck.
Girl, I got the video. Y'all can go to YouTube and watch the entire video if you want to. Go to the Shop Marketing Pros YouTube channel and look up the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast, and you will find this episode there for you to watch and get to see the view that we saw as we were recording this off of Mike's deck.
That's the thing, is that it's just, I think y'all need to take it all in. You need to hear it. You need to see it. I want you to visualize.
Yeah,
it's really good.
All right. Enjoy this one and let us know what you thought of it. We're here with Mike Ragsdale today, who is the CEO and founder of The 38 Company. So welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being on.
Excited to be here.
So The 38 Company has built an amazing tribe. Tell us a little bit about that.
We're very fortunate. I mean, we do have a very loyal and devout following, and I think it's because it comes from a place of passion and a place of authenticity. And I think that despite all of the marketing techniques that are out there, nothing replaces authenticity. Mm-hmm. And people somehow, I can't explain how or why, but whether it's through an ISDN cable or through broadcasting space, they can detect sincerity and they can detect a true authenticity, as opposed to somebody just scheduling posts and it's being done in an office in Minneapolis or something. Mm-hmm. But it's like, so we're here, we live this life, we're out on the beach, we're paddling, we're exploring the local forest, we're patronizing the local businesses. And I think that enthusiasm our team has for this lifestyle ultimately communicates through the different channels that we offer.
I think it's that lifestyle that we connect to also, right? I mean, but your story is a little different in that you're not from here. You had a whole different life.
I did. I grew up in Coleman, Alabama, which is a small town north of Birmingham, and my parents still live there. I went off to college. I went to both Auburn and Alabama, so I can play either side of that fence. I'm sorry, I can't play the LSU fence, but I got my Corey on our team and pulls the enough weight for LSU in our office. But that said, lived in Birmingham and eventually ended up in Birmingham and lived a great life, a wonderful life. But there was something since my teenage years where I've felt I was a beach person, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've just kind of felt that intrinsic link to the coast that so many people, I think, feel.
Yeah.
And it was one of those days, we have four children. One of those days, we were sitting around the dinner table and we were always pontificating about moving abroad. We were always talking about moving somewhere to the beach or whatever. And finally, my second oldest daughter said, "Mom, Dad, stop. We do nothing but talk about this. You've been talking about it for 10 years. Admit it. We're not going anywhere. We're not doing anything. This is our home. Let's just stop." And it was really a glass of water in the face, because it really was kind of a, wow, she's right. We're doing nothing but sitting here looking at real estate listings online and we're talking about it. And so, much to their shock and surprise, 60 days later, we were here. We picked up and moved very quickly. And we didn't know anyone here. This wasn't like the first choice. It just kind of happened. We were looking actually at Savannah, Georgia. We were looking at some different places. We wanted to do international, but I couldn't get my head around how to do that with four kids at four different school steps at that stage. And we knew we didn't want to get colder. So we kind of had a latitudinal line. Okay, California can't afford it. Social issues. Texas, okay. Louisiana, okay. Alabama, okay. Savannah, okay. It's got a European feel. Right. It's got a coastal vibe. So we were really looking pretty intently at that. We started looking at schools and real estate. And we were at a transitional point. It happened, that conversation happened to be at a point in time where we were transitioning from one business to an unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, well, if we're going to do it, why don't we do it somewhere we want to be? And about that time, I got a phone call from someone who had one too many properties here and was like, "Look, I got this great lot on the bay. You should come down. I hear you think about moving.
Right.
We'll work something out. I think you should come down and check it out." So we brought the kids down, we stayed at Baytown Wharf and we let them do jet skis. We went and met with the principals at the schools and let them look at the schools. We let them really buy into the
decision.
So
they were in elementary at the time?
Well, they were in all stages. We had elementary, middle, one about to go into high school and one about to leave high school. Now, we never would have taken our oldest out, but August, September to start looking.
Mm-hmm.
And she was about to start her senior year. And of course, we were going to buy the house and then wait until after her senior year. We were going to start working on it and everything. And then
was she the one that gave you the gut check?
No, it was the second oldest that gave us the gut check. But after she saw it, and I think she was just ready. And so she's the one who really said, "I want to go. I want to be a part of this. I don't want wherever I come back to not feel like home. And I'm just kind of done with this anyway." So we kind of were really reluctant to pull that trigger. But now we did. And now I think unanimously, our four children would all say it was one of the best moves we ever made. And now they think of this as home. So it was 12 years ago, I guess that happened. And I think unanimously, we all feel it was one of the best things we ever did as a family.
Right. Now, kids will do that to you.
As we record this, we're sitting at your beautiful home. Is this the lot that you came to look
at? It is, except what happened was, this is the lot, same dock, same everything, except the house. The house was built in the mid-70s. It was a brick ranch, one-story home, very unremarkable. It was a four-bedroom home, but not huge, and certainly very typical, very average. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably a fishing cabin or something at one time because it was not, I don't think it was ever intended to be a primary residence. Mm-hmm. I think it had been modified and added on to.
Yep.
But it was also very low to the, it was 5 feet above sea level. So we got flooded about 4 years ago. And from Louisiana, you guys can relate to that. It was not the flooding itself that actually did it. I mean, we only got about a foot of water in the house, but as we started to pull out sheetrock and we're finding mold and mildew and rot that have been back there for decades. And we're kind of meeting with building code people who are saying, yeah, this is never going to get approved, even if you're doing it. So we finally just pulled the cord. We bulldozed the house and built up. And so we actually got an opportunity to build a house with really Angela and I in mind. Instead of historically, we've always built it with four kids in mind. Now we were down to one child at home. Now she's even left. So we built this house really with just the idea that it was going to be optimal for both of us and certainly welcome the kids back when they want to come. But we were not going to build it with the idea that it had to accommodate so many people. So it's a much smaller house, but it's minimalist and very simple and takes advantage of the same lot that we've had for 12 years.
Nice.
Now, you're an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Business is hard. It is tough.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges that you faced in your businesses before you came here and then even now in the 30A company?
Well, the first business I had, I graduated with a master's degree in advertising and public relations and couldn't find a job really for the only reason I went and got a master's degree is because I couldn't find a job after undergrad. And the professors were like, why don't you come do some teaching assistance and we'll help pay for your man. Okay. And then when I got out, I thought I'll get a job for sure. Now still couldn't get a job. So I became an entrepreneur by accident, really, or out of necessity. And so I started a small graphic design and copywriting type business. I mean, I would design Girl Scout newsletters. I would design surveys for professors, whatever it took to just pay the bills. And that was going along fine. And I took out a small business loan to get a computer. And I bought a Mac computer and it came with this little thing called an AOL disk, which back in the day, every computer was starting to come with these. But this is before the web existed. This was in 94. And so this is before Amazon and Google and Yelp and Yahoo and any of that stuff. And before Google, et cetera. So I became fascinated with this being online. You're paying $3.95 an hour, I think, at the time. So it was a very different world. And it was dial-up and it was slow and it was, but it was still fascinating. And I made a pitch to AOL with a business idea and forgot about it, but I was an entrepreneur at that point. I was just putting out different proposals and presentation. And about 4 months later, I got a call from them and they were interested in the idea and wanted me to come up and pitch it. And so I went up with a couple of friends and very long, complicated story. But ultimately, AOL gave us money in exchange for equity in this idea to go make it happen.
Wow.
And so over the next 7 years, I mean, it was not much money, but for college kids who didn't have anything. So we started a business and grew it to about 60 or 70 employees over 7 years. And we became really AOL's most successful content studio. So we developed online branded communities. We had a humor site. We had a video game site. We had a sci-fi fantasy site. So all the geeky, cool Gen X at the time stuff. And that was really our passion. The only reason we started the video game site, because we were up in DC at their headquarters one time. And one of the guys says, if you had a video game site, companies would send you games to review, whatever. Like, really? And that's the reason we launched a video game site, not because we thought it was a great segment again. And next thing, we're getting five, six games a day being sent to us. And it sounds real fun to review video games until you have to review the stinkers.
Like, all day.
And all day, yeah. But really, we created, my friends and I created that business around our passion, right? And so we loved humor. We loved sarcasm. We loved Monty Python. We loved sci-fi. We loved debate whether the Death Star or the Enterprise would win. We'd love to debate all these stupid things. And we love to play video games. So that business was a culmination and the success of that business was a culmination of we loved it. And even if we weren't making any money, we were still having a blast every day. So we could work 16-hour days without even blinking because it was
and
what
without
we
it
loved.
Feeling like work.
That's right. Because it wasn't. We were playing Mario Kart on a projector on our office wall. And so,
working.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that said, that radiated through these channels. And so our fan base, our tribe found us. So I didn't realize at the time, but I was building the blocks for understanding how to build online branded communities like I have today with 30A. So after that, I got into a succession of businesses I had no business being. I just was doing it for the money, right? Mm-hmm. I went and worked for a healthcare IT company. I was senior VP of marketing and communications for about 450 employee company. Then owned a restaurant, failed miserably. Fitness clubs, failed miserably.
But this is all up in Alabama.
All up in Alabama, right. And so I realized I was just demoralized. I had my huge success, and I tell people, I'm not a big baseball guy, but it'd be kind of like getting to a bat and hitting a home run on your first one. But right. That was easy. I'll just keep doing that.
Yeah.
But you understand statistically that if you're hitting 300, three hits out of 10 is amazing, right? And entrepreneurship's like that. You're going to have some that are going to hit and some that, despite every business plan, every data point that suggests this is going to work, ultimately it might just not work. And you have to recognize that as an entrepreneur. It's a roller coaster ride. So I had about 10 years of drought where I was living off of the success that I had with the initial one and just failure after failure. It was very demoralizing. And when we moved to the beach, it really was pulling the eject cord. Screw it. If we're going to start over, figure out something, let's just go
really
somewhere.
Do it.
Let's just go somewhere we want to be, and at least we'll be there. And that's what we did. So the 30A was an accidental, again, it just was a hobby. And it was just something I started doing because I thought I wanted to be a writer. Okay, that's what I thought. I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to write. I'm going to write books and screenplays. Yeah. And I thought, well, I need to start blogging just to practice those creative muscles that have been dormant while I've been doing these other business endeavors since the well days. And to kind of be able to sit here and enjoy this habitat and write about it, that's what really started to attract this tribe, right? And it happened so slowly and organically. I wasn't doing it full time. I wasn't even making any money on it, but I did it just purely because I loved to do it for the first several years. And then I was doing some consulting on the side, PR consulting for different entities. And at some point, I lost a couple of accounts in rapid fire succession. And the 30A brand had gotten to a point where I'm like...
So you had already started calling it 30A at that point?
Yes.
With your blogging?
Yes. Yeah. Based on the URL, really, because I was looking for a URL to host a blog and about my life and our family's transition to the spot. I'm a branding guy. I love brands. So I looked at tons of different options. And 30A, it was, people knew kind of what 30A, that it was a road, I guess, but it wasn't used to the degree that it is today. I mean, what happened here was there was no strong brand for the region because there's no town.
Right.
Right. There's Santa Rosa Beach, but where is that? It's what this area is called, but where is that? There's no downtown Santa Rosa Beach. So what you actually had was the different communities. You had Seaside, Rosemary, Watercolor, Sandestin, Alice Beach. They were all promoting individual brands and all marketing their brands separately. And there was no, people still called this Destin.
They still do.
Those from that generation, right? Because this was what you called the whole area, even though we're not in the same county as Destin, right? We're in a different county. We're 20 miles away from what you would consider downtown Destin. So we kind of, with this 30A thing, I was like, I didn't set out to create the brand for the area by any stretch, but it just became what started to happen organically. And because there was a whole new wave of people, we're going to benefit from that for decades. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because it's for the same reason that people call this area Destin. That's the brand name. You only get one brand name to stick in a brain cell. That's the brand name they were taught this is. Well, now there's a whole wave of millions of people who've been taught this is 30A. And so that gets lodged in there. And even if there is a town of Santa Rosa Beach in a city in 14, 15, 25 years, there's still going to be an entire generation that calls it 30A forever. It doesn't matter what you do.
Time to thank our friends at RepairPal for making this episode possible. Don't get left behind. Today's tech-savvy consumers value instant gratification, so they start their searches for a repair shop on their computers and smartphones. These power users research auto repair and service options and decide which shops to engage with in an instant. Gain these customers by being RepairPal certified. They provide proof that your prices are fair with their best-in-class estimator. They're the largest site for auto repair, and they will introduce your shop to new customers through RepairPal.com and through the recommendation of partners like USAA, CarMax, and Consumer Reports. As shop owners, we were in the RepairPal certified network, and it helped grow our business. You have to be in it to win it, so head on over to RepairPal.com/shops and set up a call to learn more. When you sign up, you'll get 1 month of service free and save $150 off certification. That's RepairPal.com/shops.
When I was a kid, especially in Louisiana, I don't know if it was like this everywhere else, but someone would ask, do you want a Coke? You say, well, sure. What kind do you want? I'll have a Sprite.
Exactly.
And same thing here with 30A. And that came about because of the blog that you create.
Well, and I think, too, we've made a conscious effort now to take a step back from that, because as a local and as a business owner, growth is inevitable. Change is inevitable. You're not going to stop those sorts of things. And we have all seen what's happened here over time. And I think we've got two things as a community, really big things going for us that will preserve the integrity of the community. And one is that 40% of the land here is protected. So All the state forests, 25,000 acres in this peninsula, are protected. And you also have a height restriction of 50 feet. So You can't build over 4 stories tall anymore, except for a couple that have been around forever. And I think that helps preserve this small town America feel that you get here. But we started to want to do our best to kind of protect that. And we looked at what was going on in the marketing landscape. We looked at the Tourism Council, which, of course, their job is to promote tourism.
Right.
They spend millions of dollars every year. We don't spend any money in that sense. There's Seaside. There's Rosemary Beach, there's Alice Beach, there's Sandestin, there's Watercolor, there's Water Sound Origins, Carillon, you name it. All these communities are spending money to fill up vacation rentals and restaurants. And then you've got the restaurants and the real estate company. Mm-hmm. So everybody's spending that money. So we're like,
you don't have to do
that. We don't need to pile on and do that. Instead, we made a conscious decision about 4 years ago. Okay, we're going to stop that. And we still have advertisers that we support. And if there's a charity event this weekend at Aliqua, we will help promote that, of course, because we want to be good stewards and good community members. But our mission has really become to change into a lifestyle brand that has nothing to do with the destination. So I liken it to Patagonia's mountain range, but they're not promoting tourism in Argentina by selling Patagonia apparel.
Right.
They're selling that feeling you get when you are living that sort of lifestyle. And we believe that the 30A brand's secret recipe is it's Mayberry at the beach. It's small town America at the beach. That's what differentiates this from Daytona and Panama City and Cancun. This is not about bungee jumps and go-kart tracks and goofy golf. This is about bike rides and paddles on the lake and sunset bonfires and wine with friends and great farm-to-table food. So we believe that if we could capture that and offer it to that person who's in Kentucky or Tennessee or Minneapolis, wherever, who fantasizes about being at the beach, wishes they could do what I've done, wishes they could do what other people here have done, but for whatever reason, they either can't, whether it's physically or psychologically or financially, they've got mortgages or they got kids in schools or they got parents, PTA, tennis, whatever it is, they can't make that jump. We want to be the brand that helps them through those tough times when they're going through those beach withdrawals, when they're going through that feeling of longing and they can't be here. We want to be the beer that they open and drink. We want to be the hat that they turn on. We want to be the radio station that they turn on and listen to. We want to be the shirt they put on because it makes them happier. So I was that guy, worked in that corporate office, and on casual Fridays, I had a Tommy Bahama shirt and I drank Red Stripe beer. And never mind that nobody down here wears Tommy Bahama shirts. It's just once you're here, it's not necessary to have the colors out necessarily. And the same with Red Stripe beer. Never mind that it's brewed in Pennsylvania. People have that brand association that Red Stripe is Jamaica. Well, yeah, they make it in Jamaica, but if you're drinking it here, you're drinking it from Pennsylvania.
Right.
And we're trying to create what in some ways Jimmy Buffett's created with Margaritaville. I think he would probably admit that he's a good singer, but he's not a great singer. He's not a great musician, but he's a great storyteller. He's an amazing storyteller.
Yes.
And what he has capitalized on, the reason he's the second or third or first wealthiest musician in the world, is because he's tapped into that fantasy that exists in probably 90 to 95% of Westerners about retiring to a tropical beach somewhere, very simple hammock, flip-flops, a Mai Tai or a margarita, and just relaxing under a palm tree. That's a fantasy, right? We live here and there is some reality to it, but that's the fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I think he's built an entire industry around that fantasy. So in some ways, we're trying to capture this particular fantasy. He talks about one particular harbor. This is a particular harbor that has some really unique things. It has family focus. It has a huge potential with ecotourism and protected habitats, unlike any place else. And it has that small town values type aura around it. And I think there is a desperation in our society, people who are trapped in those long commutes, people who are unable to unplug from their technology or from their social media feeds. I think we're trying to be that reminder that, hey, there's a little town down on this mythical place down at the beach where it is about bike rides and it is about paddle boarding and it is about hanging out in a funky beach bar with your friends. We're that lifeline. So that's really what we're trying to create.
You've absolutely been that lifeline for us. At least I can speak for us because obviously we're business owners too, and we get just overwhelmed with the stress and the work and endless hours. And our kid, like your kids, who was like, why do we keep talking about it? What are we doing? And like we were just saying in the truck driving over here, he'll just, both of us, we'll just open up the 30A live feed in the office. It wasn't too long ago, I surprised him because he at breakfast was like, man, I just need to get to the beach. I just need to get to the beach. And so I went to Home Depot and picked up a palm tree and
some tiki torches.
A bucket of sand.
A bucket of sand.
Under my desk.
Still there right now.
You want sand between your toes? Here
you there you go.
That you is watered that plant?
No, I haven't.
I think he wants it to die so he has to come back here.
I got you.
But we get that.
At the same time, when we're having those days, I know that for me personally, I will go to Facebook and pull up 38 and I'll look at the latest live stream that y'all have posted of a sunrise or a sunset. And it's amazing to me that you could probably post a sunset every day and you'll get 1,000 views.
It's funny. We can sit there and we can put all sorts of production into an interview or an edited video with scenes there. But sometimes, I mean, you just can't beat the sunset or the dolphins coming by my house or whatever it is. Like that stuff, it's just, it's authentic. It's pure. And I think that's a lesson that we can all learn is sometimes it's the simplest things that resonate most.
Well, I think you were just hitting on something a minute ago when you were talking about we get wrapped up in our social media feeds, which very often becomes the highlight reel of somebody's life, and it doesn't point out the hard times and all of that. And we were talking about the dolphins. We were paddleboarding here maybe in September or something. It was last year. And four dolphins came right up and it was
checking you out.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, but it's your, like I love the Gulf, but sometimes your feed where, and I guess it's you here on the bay on a paddleboard,
usually
where it's like glass.
Yeah. Now I tell you what, there is a distinct difference between Gulf and bay life here. And what most people fantasize about the Gulf, of course, when they get here, you find that most of them end up moving to the bay. The reason is, I think, twofold. One is the Gulf is as unbelievably beautiful it is. There are privacy. You're in the middle of the action. Mm-hmm, you're in Main Street Disney World. That's where everybody wants to be. Here on the bay, it's quieter. It's more private. It is. We'll have dolphins come up 10 feet of the shore probably several times today. Maybe while we're on camera, but that would be asking a little much. But that said, you have access to all of that, but you can also pull back from it, which is, we live in at the end of the day, it's a tourist town.
Well, right? And you're what, 15 minutes, 10 minutes?
Oh, from the beach?
Yeah.
The road, you probably didn't come in this way, but it's 5 minutes down the road. So Gulf Place is our nearest beach access, Shunk Gully and those places down there. And so it's a five minute. If there was a bike path between here and there, that'd be the preferred choice.
But
we're still waiting on that. But that's the bay. There is something about having the best of both worlds here because you really can. And we're 25 minutes away this way by water to the Gulf to get to Crab Island and Destin and go through the pass. We're maybe 50 minutes this way to go up the Intracoastal Canal to Panama City and out. So, and then you've also got Choctahatchee River right here, which is like going into Costa Rica.
So you really do have a lot.
It is, everything's right here. So no, we love it. And I think that you'll find more and more development, for better and for worse, but you'll find more and more coming to this part.
As you've moved over here, like when I think about one day we will move here. And when I think about that, it just drives me to do that. But you've been here 12 years now.
Yep.
Does there ever come a time where you get used to it, where you just kind of take it for granted? Or do you still wake up every day and realize I'm living in my own paradise?
It's a little bit of both. You're very cognizant of being fortunate and blessed to live here, and that there are days where when we come back from vacation, I just came back from vacation. When I lived in Birmingham, when we would leave vacation, we would be almost in tears. Like summer camp is over and it's like, I don't want to go. Like I've got friends here. I don't want to go back to that. Now we never have that really because we're going to vacation. So there is always this sense of we live where most people fantasize.
Right.
They're scrimping and saving their vacation days and their dollars to come here. How fortunate are we to have this year round? Even as we look at guests, and you talked about the different waves of people coming here, we know as locals when Georgia schools are out, when Louisiana schools are out. So we know when people are going to be here. And a lot of times when you have people from larger cities like Atlanta, it's interesting, and we don't judge, but it is interesting because a lot of times 5-6 days is not enough time to decompress. So they get here and they're in such a hurry to relax, right?
Yeah.
That they're still on Atlanta time and they're still, and our culture operates very differently. We're much more laid back, much more relaxed because we've decompressed. Mm-hmm. And that took about 3 or 4 months for me. But I remember when we first moved here, there was these days where I would pace around and all of a sudden, and finally it was almost like a valve one day, just kind of releasing. And we see that a lot of times here in that people are still very wound up about Thursday of the week or
when
Friday.
It's time to go.
They get decompressed. They start to feel relaxed and to move into their, it's time for them to go home.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the sad part is they never really get to breathe in and exhale. So I do believe that we take it for granted though a lot. When we were building our current home, we lived in some rentals and those rentals were 2 blocks from the beach. Hardly ever. It's like, okay, we looked at it as a vacation. Hey, we're going to get to feel what it's like to live in other communities here. And we actually lived in several different homes during that period of time. And
how long was that?
It was about 2 years all told. And it was one of those things where we're like, man, we're going to be right across the street from the beach. How cool is this? But we found that we didn't take advantage of it. We got involved in our jobs and you forget.
Sure.
The minute you step out, you remember, right? So it's like yesterday I had a meeting with, it's like, hey, you want to go meet at Tringo, have a drink, talk about this stuff. There are these moments when you're like, okay, it's a Monday afternoon.
And
I'm sitting at a beach bar on the patio, having a business meeting, having some cocktails. And that's when you really do appreciate that. And you see the other people who are at the bar and you can tell they're not from here and they're all lined up to enjoy their last week of vacation. That's when you begin to feel pretty fortunate and blessed.
So you talked a few minutes ago about that guy. You said that guy that wants to do what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, and I've read where that's part of your life's passion now is to help encourage people to do what you've done and get their dream life. What do you tell those folks?
There's something, a strategy I have called climbing the ladder, but to step back from that, it really is just sound like a Nike ad. It's just do it. And it sounds so easy to say that and so monumental to achieve it. It's really so much easier than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that is changing jobs or whether it's going on an around the world adventure or whether it's just deciding it's time for vacation and we're going to go for 2 or 3 weeks instead of 5 days, you'd be stunned at how easy it is to do once you've set your mind to it. I hear you say it will happen. That is the key, number one. Okay, I believe that we were taught as children a lesson early on that went over most of our heads, no pun intended. It was in T-ball. And every coach back then said, keep your eye on the
ball.
We all heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I was horrible at sports and still am. But I recognized at some point later in life, they did not mean that metaphorically. They weren't saying, pay attention. There is if you keep your eye on the ball. There's a reason football players wear numbers. I mean, you're trying to hit targets. And it somehow, when someone's throwing a 90-mile-an-hour ball at you, if you keep your eye literally on the ball, somehow your body can coordinate and hit it. If you're kind of, what's that guy in left field doing? You're not going to hit that ball. So I think career-wise and lifestyle-wise, many of us, we graduate college and we do what I did. Most of us do this. We just send out resumes. We're not really thinking about what we want.
Mm-hmm.
I'll move where. So if somebody offers me a job in Detroit, I'll go live in Detroit. Well, I'm telling you, where you live has a huge direct impact on your happiness. And
I'm
a big believer that you should decide where you want to be first. You'll figure out the rest, especially if you're coming out of college. Like if you want to live in Paris, if you want to live in Aspen, you want to live in New York, go there. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But here's what's not going to happen. If your fantasy is to live in Paris, you take a job in Des Moines. It's going to be a long time before you find yourself working in Paris, right? So I believe that this climbing the ladder strategy, I liken it back to the first time I remember having a high dive jump. I'm scared of heights, not like a phobia or anything, but just like anybody, a natural tendency to not want to plummet to my death. And there was a Olympic swimming pool in Decatur, Alabama. So they had these, not just the high dives, but these concrete platforms that Louganis and a lot of these guys train for the Olympics on. So you would climb up these stairs to these concrete platforms. And pretty much if you didn't jump, you were jeered. I mean, you're up there in front of everybody.
Right.
So you climb up the ladder, there's a lifeguard standing up there. It looks insane. Now, this is even off the lowest of the three concrete platforms. I never even considered going much higher than that. But I remember being a prepubescent middle schooler type kid, and you're up there and you're awkward and embarrassed to begin with. And, and all the girls are looking at you and all the guys are jeering at you and yelling profanities and jump and all that stuff. At some point, you have to make a decision. You either have to climb back down, which occasionally happened, and it was brutal to hear people yelling at wussy, whatever.
Yeah.
Or you jumped and had an impact and it probably hurt and you belly flopped, whatever, but you survived and you did it. I believe that big decisions like that, if you want to make some, let's say you want to do an around the world trip or you want to move to the beach, I think honestly, you've got to put yourself up there on that platform. You've got to commit, and that can be committing in a financial way. Mm-hmm. So in the case of, we wanted to do an around the world trip about 6 years ago, didn't know how we were going to do it. And we just went online and bought the tickets and 9 months out and just said, we'll figure out homeschooling. We'll figure out, like, we don't know how we're going to do this, but we'll figure it out.
Right.
At that point, we had about 8,000 bucks in the game. And we went on Facebook and said, we're going to do this. So, yeah, and so it was like, no, you didn't want to be that guy, like, we're, like six. Yeah. You didn't want people going, hey, how's that? How was that trip? Yeah, we decided not to go. Like, you know, it's like there's peer pressure at that point to do it. Once you've said you're going to do it, whether it's moving to the beach or starting a new business or quitting a job or whatever. So I do believe that climbing the ladder is, no pun intended, is the first step. And it's an incredibly important step because I did not want to jump off that. I wanted to climb back down. But the humiliation I would suffer outweighed the death in my mind. I was more afraid of being humiliated than dying.
So was it your daughter? Was it your daughter that day that really made you climb up there?
That's probably, it was probably like the pin, the straw that broke the camel's back. It's like, we just needed that push.
Yeah.
But
she kind of called you out.
She absolutely called us out. And that peer pressure, that was more of a wake up moment. That was more of a, wow. I mean, a decade has slipped by in this city and I didn't even realize it. And maybe she's right. Maybe this is just where we need
to
be.
Time goes by really fast.
And that was kind of like, okay, we probably do need to make a decision. Are we just going to do this? Are we going to do this? And we went this way instead. But I think that for decisions that scare you, like jumping, it's not just the jump. It's put yourself in a position where it's difficult to back out of. It's not impossible to back out of, right? So if you're going to start a business next year, maybe you're working in a cubicle farm and you want to go start your own business, you can say, hey guys, I'm starting a business, and tell your employer at the right time that you're, I mean, it's going to force you to figure it out. And guess what? You can figure it out. Whatever it is, you can absolutely do it. And I promise you that if you're that guy in Nashville that thinks you can't do it, it doesn't matter whether you have mortgages or kids in schools or whatever, you can do it. It's just a question of trade-off.
You talked about your early businesses and how they were businesses of passion and they succeeded, they thrived. And then you went into other businesses, as many entrepreneurs do. They're like, well, I'm doing well in this business. Let me go do this other thing that most of them have no business doing. I've done it myself, failed miserably. And it seems to be those businesses that where you have the passion, where they thrive. And it's got to be the same thing. I've got a quote written down here by Seth Godin, who famously said, instead of wondering where your next vacation is, maybe you should set up a life you don't need to escape from.
Absolutely.
And you talked about that person that if they get offered the job in Detroit, they'll go to Detroit, or and how much the location really does mean. What is it like to own a business where you are in that place that there's nowhere that you would rather be?
Well, it's amazing. And it is one of those things that it was, though, calculated in some ways. So you mentioned Seth. Another book that was absolutely pivotal for me was Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, which I know probably a lot of your listeners have read. If not, you need to. It really was and is the blueprint for the 30A business. So for the first 8 years, I didn't have any employees, no office, no business, still don't have business cards. It's like it was all virtual. And the only reason I could go around the world is because everything was from my laptop. Absolutely everything. And there were no employees on retainer. There was I mean, I had freelancers who did various tasks, but I architected the business that way from day one. I remember one of the things in the book was you need to decide if you had $1 billion in your bank account, what would you do on a daily basis? At first, yes, you're going to go to Ibiza and do the glow sticks thing and you're going to fly around. But really, after a while, on a daily basis, what would your life look like if money were no object? And what that does is it sounds like it's an easy, I can rattle off a bunch of things, but it really is hard when you sit down and say, okay, what would I do? Because I don't play golf, but you know, I've talked to guys who have more money than they would do with, and it's like they play golf for a few years and then it's like, but then they get tired of that and they all end up back in business because they're all, they don't need any more money, but they're all looking for something mentally challenging, right?
So, and it's what they know.
It's what they know and it's what they love to do, right? So in my case, I wrote down a list of things that if money was no object, and this is before the 30A business and existed, and actually it was in the process of when we were getting ready to move, but it wasn't quite there yet. But I wrote down, would spend days on the beach. I'd spend as much time on the water as possible. I would hang out with fun friends. I would drink in funky beach bars. I would enjoy cigars and laughter. I mean, it was all these, this type of list, and I've still got the list. And it was this type of list. And what's interesting about it and what he kind of challenges you to think about, if you really step back and look at lists. Oh, and another thing was I would travel without restraint, travel without time limits. Right. I would never have to wake up to an alarm, like things like the very tactical things. But when you step back and look at the list, almost none of them required any money. They required being in the right place, maybe living in the right place, but none of them required $1 billion,
right?
None of them. I mean, they were all things that you have this perception that this is a fantasy life, but really it's very obtainable. So I looked at, with the exception of travel without restraint, which that does cost a little money, but actually it's cheaper than people think to have achieved that. And even yesterday when I was having this meeting down at Chiringo with my friend, we were talking about this actually. And I said, this is the personification. This is that list. It took years to get there, but it's because I kept my eye on that fantasy. I kept my eye on that list. And now really is the daily life I live. And I feel very fortunate. And that's why when somebody has asked me in the past about selling 30A or buying 30A as far as the lifestyle brand, and I'm like, I'm not in a hurry to do that because this is what I want to do. Like, in other words, if I sold it tomorrow, I would still be doing this. Like, I mean, because this is my natural state. You know what I mean? It's like, this is my natural state. And so I think that if you're a passionate about something, whether it's cars or surfing or craft beer or coffee shop, whatever it is, if you're passionate about something, if you follow that passion, then even if you're only making $20,000 a year, $30,000 a year, you're going to be enjoying your days because you're going to be doing what you love to do. So even if you're failing, you're going to be succeeding because I don't believe the goal of life is to accumulate wealth or things. It's to be happy. So if you're happy, you win. You can be an invalid or a prisoner and happy. You're still living a better life than a billionaire who's unhappy.
Yeah.
I mean, plain and simple.
And wherever you are, I mean, we're in Hammond, Louisiana, and it's one of our core values is to make sure that the people that work in our office are happy. 8 hours a day is a long time to be miserable. And so
happiness to me is the meaning of life. And it's like, if you're not happy, every day that goes by, it's an hourglass, and every grain of sand that drops through is one day. You don't know how many coming down. Yeah. It's like the top's blacked out. So you can't see how many grains are left, but every day that passes through that's unhappy is a waste. That's a score against you. Every day that drops through, it's happy, is a victory. So I think we've been trained, and it's not our parents' fault. It's just the way they were trained. But we're all taught to believe if you go work, you put in your 40, 50 hours a week. And then when you get to be 60, 65, 70 at the worst, you're going to end up at this Shangri-La and you're going to have all this money saved. You can be able to go wherever you want. And it's like my dad, he worked for the power company. I started as a meter reader and worked for the power company for 42 years. And he's like, do what you're doing some, because he's like, I'm telling you, I'm not going to be on a jet ski anytime soon. I'm not traveling to Vietnam and to Laos. It's like, he can't.
I think that's probably, so we had two massive floods, not hurricane related, 2 years ago. So in 2016, and I think that was the beginning of the switch for us when you said, he actually said, we are moving here. The transition from, oh, we want to move there and it would be so great to live there. I think it was the beginning of that switch for us to saying, we are moving here. It's in our plan. We're working on that, was those floods. And then,
well, I watched my parents lose everything.
Of course.
The flood, we literally, when it was done and over with, we knocked their house to the ground and ended up rebuilding for them. But also during that time, there was 3 months that I completely left the business to just go focus on helping my parents. And the business went on. My people took care of it. It's like we talk about, we're going to move here. Well, we love Hammond, Louisiana.
It's a fantastic place.
It's an amazing place. And we will always have roots in Hammond.
Sure.
We've got our business there. We will be back and forth to Hammond.
Friends,
our family
there.
And friends are there. So it's a place that will always be involved in that community. But our day-to-day will be here.
Well, and that's, I have a theory, or not a theory, but a belief that there are what you call one percentile places to live. And what I mean by that is they're the best places on the planet to live. Some people, for some people, it's Manhattan or Prague. Some people, it's Aspen. Some people, it's Santa Rosa Beach. Some people, it's St. Augustine or Cancun, whatever. It doesn't matter where it is, but those are the most desirable places in the world to live. If you live in the at the beach, you're going to wish you had snow-capped mountains at some point. If you live in the mountains, you're going to wish you had the beach, or you wish you had the restaurants of Manhattan. You always want what you don't have. So you have to recognize that, okay, pick a one percentile place to call home. Unapologetically pick it, because there's no right or wrong. It could be Vienna, or it could be Franklin, Tennessee, whatever it is, wherever your dream spot is, pick that place and unapologetically just plant your flag. This is home.
Yep.
And then visit the other one percentile places, right? So I think there's a lost efficiency because people end up getting the grass is always greener type syndrome. They live here at the beach for a few years and they go, man, I really miss the mountains and I wish we could snow ski all the time. We don't even have that here. Or they go there. Then they're like, man, I can't believe we left the beach, man. That was key.
Grass
we were paddleboarding. Yeah. So you have to recognize that's true and that no one place has everything.
Yep.
And you have to pick the one that kind of speaks to you, but also there may be others that speak to you, but just pick one, call it home. So like what we do is we now, this is our home. This is it. We're here. This physically, I mean, we're not moving from anywhere, but we're going to travel a lot. And we love to travel. So we'll go, January and February are not our favorite months here. So we'll take off those 2 months moving forward. And that's when we're going to go these other extraordinary places. So I think that too many people try to own rental homes all the place and you can only be in one place at a time. So so pick a place and focus on it and then visit the others.
So with the company, everything's the life, the everything sounds wonderful and amazing. Is there anything about the process of the quick process of moving here and then of starting 30A, the brand, anything that you would tweak or change or do differently in hindsight?
It's a great question. It all happens organically and it's very difficult to take one thing out. Yes, there, I would have picked this strategic alliance instead of this one, or I would have invested in this earlier, or I would not have wasted so much time on this endeavor that ended up not producing anything. But that's, to me, that's just the practical ebb and flow of figuring out what works. I don't think you can say any more than you can go back and change something you did in high school or whatever. It's just part of what got you here. So everything has been an organic evolution. And I think if you extracted some of that stuff, you would lose whatever makes it what it is today.
Yeah, it's good.
So I think that I held out as long as I could to not grow it into an entity, right? And now that I've done that, it's been almost, I guess it's been 3 years. And so we hired our first employee kind of about 3 years ago. And now we have just an amazing team to see that come to life. And now know, to your point, I can go travel and there are still things being accomplished. Mm-hmm. I work from home, so I can be doing something like this and know that meanwhile in the office, the team is still cranking on all these things, many endeavors I don't even know about. And it's like, sometimes you tell me about products, I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. I can't wait to see that. We have a new Malbec wine that came out. We've got four wines and I didn't even know it was out. And I was like, man, I got to go by the store and get a bottle because I'd like to, I'd tried it in the sampling days, but I haven't seen the actual product. So it's great to have a team that's accomplishing things independent. And so I think it happened in the right order. I think I held out as long as I could, but I also think it was the right step to finally
let all of those things led up to. So now every decision you make, you're pulling from all of the past decisions that you...
Correct. And now I've got part like my partner, Joanne, she's off on a fishing trip right now. She's a big fly fisherman. So I went on my big trip. Now she's off on hers, but she's our chief operating officer. And she really was a fundamental correct decision. I've made bad partner decisions in the past, but she was just an amazing decision. And so we've been like a yin and yang team. She's the numbers person. She knows processes and I'm the vision guy. I'm the brand guy. I'm the evangelist. So we make a great team in that sense. And that's a big decision though, to bring in a partner and to see that be a correct decision all these years later is a really a great feeling, because now it really does give me, like your parents, to be able to step away and to go help them, gives me that comfort knowing that I can be extracted from the machine. And you have to be. It's like you have to be extractable. Otherwise, the company doesn't have as much value.
Now, the 30A company, it's much more than a business. It's see where you partner with your community, give back. You got 1.5 million of the little blue stickers out there that when someone purchases those, that benefits like a
Aliqua,
shelter.
Or, Animal Refuge, yep. Actually, Aliqua is right over there. And Lori Hood started that organization years ago, really almost just kind of trying to help out because there wasn't a no-kill shelter here. And so now she's got several hundred animals at any given time, everything from emus to peacocks to chickens to rabbits to exotic birds to dogs. And actually, in 2 weeks, I think I want to say April 12th, I'm just shooting from the hip, but there's a new series coming out specifically about her on National Geographic. So the series debuts in 2 weeks.
Is that... It's the same name of the dog park that we just went to.
That's
Are they affiliated?
Okay. That's one of their, somebody probably donated that land and they turned it into a dog park. But so there's a show, it's coming out and I can't remember the name of it. I'm embarrassed. But that said, it'll be debuting on National Geographic Channel and it's starring her. So every week they follow through our 30 yeah. sticker program, which is 100% donation driven.
When did it become, has it always been Aliqua?
As far as the recipient of the donations for the stickers, yes. Okay. But we've got other partnerships. We have a charity called the Sonder Project, which we've partnered with YOLO Board and a company called 360 Blue here, a vacation rental company. And combined, we've pooled our resources to create the Sonder Project, which is really focused on helping to eliminate and fight extreme hunger and poverty domestically and abroad. Mm-hmm. But specifically, we've been building some schools and wells and stuff in Burkina Faso, which is in Africa. And we're trying to take a dollar and make it go as far as it possibly can. It's like improving standards here is very different from improving. It can go a lot farther and have a much bigger reach. So we do locally. We do internationally. Yeah. We do domestically. Our dumpster diver t-shirts, all of these t-shirts are made from recycled plastic bottles. So this shirt is made from about 8 16-ounce plastic bottles that we reclaim from landfills in the Southeast. We just sold our 125,000th shirt, which means we've recycled about 1 million plastic bottles as of 2 weeks ago.
So cool.
So when
you said eight bottles and that, so some people may think, well, it's just eight bottles, but then your shirt's eight bottles, mine's eight bottles, his.
Yep. And then you sell 125 and we're in 160 stores nationwide that sell this gear. And so it's not, again, not about promoting, hey, here, come to the panhandle and enjoy our beaches. There are stores in Oregon, Washington State, New Hampshire, Texas, Michigan that carry this that could care less that 30A is a destination. It's more about they like the eco-friendly message and what it's doing. So that's really this next iteration of the 30A company that is we're not focused on being a destination brand. We're focused on being the homepage for beach fans. We want, if you come to 30A.com, yes, you may see that we've got a ties with Aliqua and we've got local events happening, but you're also going to see articles submitted from surfers in Bali. You're going to see people who are doing conservation work in South Africa or in Spain. So we're becoming much a BuzzFeed for the beach in some ways, much a broader content, and our apparel, same kind of thing. We're taking the approach where we want 30A to represent this feeling you get. And it doesn't matter whether you've even been here or not. I tell people about 8 years ago, even though I thought of myself as a beach person and a parrot head and all those things over the years, Key West, first time I went there was about 8 years ago. Have you been there?
Yeah.
Okay. Loved it. I will say that the fantasy of Key West is actually more powerful than the reality of Key West.
We would agree. We drove down to Key West with our camper and two dogs and two teenage boys just this past summer. And
well, we went because we wanted to see, do we want to live in Key West or do we want to live in 38? We knew, we kind of narrowed it down and said, okay, it'll be one of these two places. And we did enjoy Key West.
Oh, it was great. It's beautiful.
We'll take 38 over Key West.
And that's what we did, the same thing about 2 years ago. We did a road trip in my beat up old truck and we just hugged the coast and we said, all right, we know we're going to break down at some point because we're going to take 2 weeks. And we know at some point my jalopy will break down. But as long as we're along the coast, who cares? We'll find a beach bar, get somebody to fix it, and we'll have 48 hours where we're just sitting in some random beach town. So how cool will that be? So we did break down on the way back up the East Coast, but it was just like on a Saturday night. We just sat Monday morning. We were on the road again. So it's no big deal. West Palm Beach. We had to spend a Sunday. What was us?
Terrible. You know?
So that said, same kind of thing. We really got to see all of Florida's beaches up close and personal, all of them. And I've never seen anything like this. As much as there was appeal and they each had their unique charm, I haven't seen anything that I would trade. Mm-hmm. But the Key West thing, it's reinforced to me that the idea of 30A is more powerful than even 30A itself as a road. It's, again, there are more people who need the idea than the physical place. And so Key West is one of those things where, again, I think that I had this fantasy of what it was. And as Key West, I'm envisioning beaches and palm trees and cottages. And then when I got there, I was like, you know, it's not really a beach.
It's not.
Of course, there. I mean, again, wonderful place. Love it. Been a couple times since then and would definitely go back. And it's cool and funky, but it's not the fantasy I had.
I would live here and visit there. That'd be a place I would visit.
Absolutely. Dude. And so I think that's what we're really trying to accomplish here is we're not trying to convince anybody to move here. We're trying to convince people that there is a different way to live. There is a simpler way to live and that it doesn't have to involve affluence and technology, and it doesn't have to. It's just, it's a campfire. It's a bike ride. It's a drive through the forest.
Right.
It's just hanging out with friends.
Switch. Is that what you would say is really immediate future of the 30A company? Is there anything else that's coming that you want to talk about?
Three divisions in the company. We've got digital, which is what we started with. That's the websites, the mobile apps, the Facebook page, the social media pages, the radio station, 24/7 radio station. It's at 30aradio.com. Then we've got retail, which is we've got three stores that are local, but we have a huge online sales division, which is the biggest part of our business in a lot of ways. We've got...
Which, by the way, I'm just going to say the marketing for that is really good. Every single day, every day.
Okay, well, thank you. And then the licensing is the third part of the company, which is the smallest part of the company now, but could be... Margaritaville's, at this point, all they are is a licensing company. They don't even own the restaurants or anything anymore. They just license that brand to those places. And to those products. So we have the 30A Beach Blonde Ale by Grayton Beer. We have a new 30A Rosé beer coming out next month. We have all the beers and cans coming out. We have my dog coming out. Cosmo. We have wine. We have coffee, honey, paddle boards. We have bikes. All of these different products that we don't make, but we license to people that want to partner. So I think last year we kind of said, okay, we've got this new recycled apparel line, which we call Dumpster Diver. It's kind of a subset of the 30A brand. Okay, it's a question mark. Will people outside of the Southeast and Midwest, will a place in California, will a place in Wisconsin, will a place in Maine carry 30A apparel? It was a big question mark. I thought they would, but it was still kind of a sure until we try. So we kind of looked at the footprint of our mailings, and it is real heavy Southeast and Midwest, St. Louis, etc. But it didn't go too much further north of North Carolina, too much further west than Texas. So as we start to go out with this apparel line, we're able to very quickly get into lifestyle and outdoor outfitters and surf shops in Atlanta, Nashville, places like that, because they recognize the brand.
Right.
And then it started happening in Grand Haven, Michigan, in Galveston, Texas, and in Portland, Oregon, and in New Hampshire, and in New Jersey. And so now we're in all of these surf shops and or outdoor outfitters or lifestyle boutiques or places, any place that sells Vineyard Vines or Life is Good or whatever. They like the message and they like the designs and the feel of the product. So a year into that now, we looked at it and we said, okay, we're in 160 locations nationwide.
Right.
And we're like, okay, so it worked. That worked. So now this year, our focus really is transitioning the digital side of the company to where it's not just, hey, come out to this place Friday night. We'll still help our advertisers and our local business, but we recruited a team of freelance writers from, again, Bali, South Africa, Spam, you name it. We've got writers all over the world now submitting articles. And those articles might be 7 things you didn't know about starfish.
Gotcha.
It might be what you really need to know about sunscreen. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's things that appeal to all beach people everywhere.
Right.
And whether you've been here or not, it's secondary. We still have a section for local news, but we're trying to step. So I think that's a big part of the transition. So I would say that the two big things we have going is growing the digital brand to see if we can become the homepage for beach fans.
Right.
And also expanding the licensing, partnering with companies that make exceptional products. We're really particular about who we partner with because we want it to be authentic. We want it to feel right. There's only so many local products you can go with. At some point, you run out of, you can't have wine from here. You can have wine from Washington State where we do it, but we pick the best and we work with them to kind of craft what we think are coastal varietals. That said, the other thing is we get this big music series launched called 38 Sessions. And so our first was in October, and that was Lady Antebellum. And we had kind of a Austin City Limits meets the beach type concept. And we're working on show number two and not in a position to announce who it is yet. But that said, we'll be somebody we think will go outside the country genre. Can't go into names, but that said, we really want it to end up being something that it's not just about the 300 people who are there experiencing. It's about capturing it and sharing it in a way like Austin City Limits does with the world. So
speed run.
All right. Yeah. Oh. Let's wrap it up. We're just going to toss out something to you. And just the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Key-dokey. And if you have any others to throw in there, but so let's start off with your best 30A memory.
I would say maybe it was just because I just mentioned it, but 30A Sessions that night was a truly It was a pinch me, is this really happening? We had been working about on it, talking about it for years, and had pulled it together. And it's like, this performance is happening and the band sounds amazing and the people are just loving it. And it's magical. And everybody is like looking at each other like, is this happening? Everybody on our team is like, is that Lady Antebellum?
Right.
And are we playing to 300 people? Yeah. And are those seven different videographers moving around on professional grade? Mm-hmm. Is this on Facebook live streaming right now? You know, and so that was an extremely surreal moment where it was like, wow, this went from an imaginary nothing to now we're really sitting here and this is just the beginning of something pretty extraordinary. So I would say that was certainly a very vivid highlight.
Cool. Congrats.
Thank you.
All right. What is your favorite time of the year at the beach?
If you ask most locals, they will tell you that April and October are the two best months. Mm-hmm. October has always been the local secret, and it's because these 2 months have the mildest weather. They typically have some of the least visitation. Mm-hmm. People are in school.
Mm-hmm.
October is generally favored a little bit over April because the Gulf has had time to warm up, and therefore it's like bath water. It's still a little chilly right now because you haven't had that intense summer sun on the water.
That answers your question.
Yeah, but it's warmer. It's still warm in October. My personal favorite, though, most people would look at me like I'm crazy, but I love the summer months. I love being on the water. That's why I moved here. Mm-hmm. I want to be on a boat. I want to be sweating my behind off. I want to be feeling the energy of people who are coming here. So a lot of people look at me and like, they don't get that because a lot of people leave during the summer. I'm one of those guys who it's still magical to me.
All right, cool. I think that would be me too, but he would be October.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gulf or Bay? Yeah. You kind of already answered.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't turn down them. Free place on the Gulf kind of thing. But that said, for me, this is talking back about that list and not just the list I made, but you talk back to high school. And I know this is supposed to be a speed round, so I'm failing miserably at speed. But that said, I remember basically saying, if you could have your fantasy life, what would it be? And it was just a small house down by the water, by the beach somewhere. Like, that's it. That's all I need to be happy. Yeah. And now that I've got it, it's kind of like I can't ever complain. I still do, but I have to remind myself it's not fair to complain because I've gotten what I wanted.
Right. You may have answered this too. Favorite 30A beach?
No, I haven't. They're all so cool. I would say that the one we tend to go to most is Grayton Beach because I would say if Seaside is the heart of the area, then Grayton's the soul of the area.
So, like you, right? I know it's supposed to be speed round, but I have to ask a question that he's probably going to ask too. Mm-hmm. And son's been trying to find it from the local teens and everybody gives him a different answer. So ours is Grayton Beach also. Mm-hmm. That outflow is amazing. When is it open? Like, is that just...
Totally unpredictable. What happens is that outflow right there is connected to Western Lake, which of course you cross as you're going to Watercolor. So that's one of the largest coastal dune lakes. And we have, I think, 16 coastal dune lakes here. So what happens is as the lake fills up, so after a week of rain, the water pressure becomes strong enough that it bursts through the sand dunes. So during that time, which could last a day, it could last a month, the water equalizes. So the lake drains and then the dune are repaired by the Gulf. So at some point, the Gulf starts to, after the pressure is equalized, the Gulf starts to rebuild those dunes. So there's this exchange of sea life and seawater going into the lakes and vice versa. Anything can swim in, anything can swim out. There's been sharks in the lakes. There's been alligators in the Gulf. And that happens unpredictable intervals, but usually after strong rains.
Yep.
It's really cool because it breaks differently every time. So it might break this way. It might break that way. It might be open for 3 days. Mm-hmm. It might be open for a month.
Last year was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like the lake water turned that clear.
Yep.
Like the Gulf.
Well, that's when the Gulf is filling it back up. Mm-hmm. And so most people do ask about the color of the water. It's just tannins. It's not dirty. It's the color of pine straw that falls from the trees and leaves that fall from the trees into the lake. And it steeps it like a tea.
Yeah.
And so then there are a lot of people who, out of ignorance, and I don't mean that in an insulting way, it's just like when they come out, they see brown water in the Gulf. They're like, what is this? Oh, it's runoff from development. Mm-hmm. No, it's just the dune lakes. Yeah. And what they do is they burst out. And if you look at an aerial, it's very segmented. I mean, you got this tropical green turquoise water, and then you've got this flow from the lakes. And then as the lakes seal back up, the Gulf water goes back into it and ends up being just this
perfect little... We paddleboard from the state park over to the outflow and pretty cool. Okay. So we were worried about whether you could even answer this question because of your connections to local businesses and stuff like that. So best key lime pie?
I love key lime pie, but I can't tell you offhand. I'm trying to think of a place that even... I mean, I know they serve it. I just can't think of... I mean, it's probably be... Stinky's or the Bay or Great Southern, but I'm trying to, as soon as I say that, somebody's going to say Stinky's doesn't have key lime pie or whatever. So I don't
know. Can we even ask him that?
That's pretty specific, but I do love key lime pie and I just can't think offhand of who makes the best.
We're
but I tell you what, you can't go wrong with Chanticleer. I will say that Chanticleer is a bakery and restaurant, and they've always, if they've got key lime pie, I guarantee it's right up there.
We're a little partial, but maybe it's because we haven't tried enough to the Red Bar's key lime pie.
Oh yeah. You can't go wrong with Red Bar.
Yep. All right. Wrapping it up. We're getting there. You just said this with your best 30A memory. I'm assuming best 30A event.
Yeah, that I would actually say Digital Graffiti.
See, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, Digital Graffiti.
Coming up, right?
It is coming up. It's actually an event I started about 10 years ago, 11 okay. years ago now, and I was doing consulting work, public relations, when I first moved here for Alice Beach. And they were looking for an event that would showcase the unique qualities of Alice Beach, but without being another jazz festival or another mm-hmm. wine fest kind of thing. So as I was sitting around looking at this beautiful town, I was brought back to my days at AOL when we would put Mario Kart on this huge wall in our office and we hooked up a projector and we would sit there and play every day at quitting time. We would sit there on the couch and have tournaments. So as I sat there, I started looking at these rooftops and white walls and I just said, this is huge projection space. And so Alice Stevens, who is the granddaughter of Alice, who it's named after, was the style director at the time, and Kelly Seiler, who was the events director, we just begged and borrowed and stole projectors from schools and libraries and business, anybody who would loan us a projector. Old school projectors. And we went out and did some tests and it was like, holy cow, this looks amazing. And we held the first event and I don't think anybody knew what we were talking about. Even the founder of the town brought me into the office about 2 weeks before and said,
what are you doing?
Now, what is this thing? Like, yeah, I don't think we should do this. I'm like, we got people coming, dude. Like, I mean, this is happening. It's going to happen. I mean, there's no stopping it now.
Yeah.
Because we got people coming in. So they did it, fortunately. And now it's become really one of the signature events of the area and it will only continue to grow. It's stunning. Really stunning. I think it's in May this year.
I think I just read about it in not Coastal Living, but another big coastal-ish mm-hmm. magazine. But
it is extraordinary if you've never been. It's like being able to interact and walk into art. I mean, there was an event. Every artist does something different. So originally it was just projecting cool videos and images mm-hmm. on the wall. Now, like we were hoping it would, it's really come to where artists are curating specific pieces. So they'll look at the space that's on a wall or a chimney and they'll design some art specifically for that space. And not only that, now it's getting interactive like we hope. Yeah. And so you can walk up. There was a one where they had vines growing up a wall. And when you went up and touched it, the vines would die where you touched it. And then 30 seconds later, they would grow back. But you could just walk up. And so it's starting to get really cool.
Share the date. It's May.
Digitalgraffiti.com. I would hate to say the wrong date. I want to say it. I know it's in May. I think it's around the 12th. But again, I would hate to give the wrong date. But digitalgraffiti.com. And I think this is going into its 11th year. So it's really super cool.
Last one.
Artists from all over the world, by the way.
Awesome. Kayak, canoe, or paddleboard?
Paddleboard. I'm a YOLO board, was born here down the street. My buddy Jeff Archer started that company about the same time as 30A. So we've been watching each other's growth parallel. And I used to own kayaks, two-person kayaks when we were here. But the perspective you get when you're standing up and looking down as opposed to sitting mm-hmm. level with the water is much better. And it's just, to me, it's more versatile. And it's also, it's just a lot of fun. And it's something anybody can do.
It is. We've loved it. When we were in Key West, we were paddleboarding down there. And the manatee came up underneath.
No way.
It was literally.
That's magical.
The size of half of, oh my gosh, it was incredible. So anyways.
Well, Mike, we could sit here and ask you questions all day. This has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being part of it. All right, y'all. I hope that y'all enjoyed that podcast as much as we did. Thank you for listening in. And thank you again to our sponsors, RepairPal, for providing this episode. Remember, we are just one of a handful of podcasts on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all of them at aftermarketradionetwork.com. Tune in again next week. And until then, go fill those bays.
You've been listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Kim and Brian Walker. Follow the podcast on your favorite listening app. Find their emails in the show notes and visit them at shopmarketingpros.com. Let Kim and Brian know what you want discussed because they're all about advancing the aftermarket.